Over time, he became increasingly convinced that he was an official White House spokesman, often creating serious headaches for the White House, even as he celebrated this Protestant president who has more courage than 90% of the Catholic priests in the country. "Capitalism is doomed and is not worth trying to save," Coughlin pronounced. At other times, he advocated state capitalism, a phrase rich in both fascist and Marxist associations. Indeed, Coughlin's economic populism usefully illustrates how ideological categories from the 1930s have been systematically misapplied ever since. As mentioned before, Richard Pipes described Bolshevism and fascism as twinned heresies of Marxism. Both sought to impose socialism of one sort or another, erase class differences, and repudiate the decadent democratic capitalist systems of the West. In a sense, Pipes' description doesn't go far enough. While fascism and Bolshevism were surely heresies of Marxism, virtually all collectivist visions at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th centuries were heresies of Marxism in the sense that Marxism itself was heretical. All of these isms, as the philosopher Eric Voegelin argued, were premised on the idea that men could create utopias through the rearrangement of economic forces and political will. Marxism, or really Leninism, was the most influential and powerful of these heresies and came to define the left. But just as Leninism was a kind of applied Marxism, so too was fascism, as well as technocracy, Fabian socialism, corporatism, war socialism, German social democracy, and so on. Collectivism was the wave of the future, according to the title and argument of a book by Anne Merle Lindbergh, and it would be known by different names in different places. The fascist moment that gave birth to the Russian-Italian method was in reality a religious awakening in which Christianity was to be either sloughed off and replaced or updated by the new progressive faith in man's ability to perfect the world. From the dawn of the progressive era through the 1930s, the intellectual and ideological landscape was fractured within this larger camp. The fight between left and right was for the most part between left-wing and right-wing socialists. But virtually all camps subscribed to some hybridized version of Marxism, some bastardization of the Rousseauian dream of a society governed by a general will. It was not until the late 1940s, with the revival of classical liberalism led by Friedrich Hayek, that collectivism of all stripes was once again fought from a right that did not share the core assumptions of the left. What's aggravating is that the vestigial carbuncles like Coughlin are still counted as figures of the right, because of their anti-Semitism or opposition to FDR, or because they're simply too embarrassing to the left, even though on the fundamental philosophical and political questions, Coughlinites were part of the liberal progressive coalition.